This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. A month after Election Day, just about everything has been settled, at least on the national level. The Secretary of State in Washington ordered a hand recount yesterday after the latest machine recount showed just 42 votes separate gubernatorial candidates Dino Rossi and Christine Gregoire. And Ohio, the state that decided the presidential election, will conduct a recount. More on that in a minute. With Ohio, President Bush scored a decisive victory in both the popular and the electoral vote. But there are questions still about why. Exit polls pegged moral values as the most important issue on Election Day, though terrorism, Iraq, and the economy weren't far behind. We'll talk today with pollster Andy Kohut about what we know now that we didn't know then. Later in the program, we'll focus on the African-American and Latino vote. If you have questions about who voted and why, about the evangelical vote, about moral values, or about the meaning and accuracy of the exit polls, our number here in Washington is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. And our email address is totn@npr.org. But first, Ohio. Joining us is Tamara Keith, a reporter with member station WOSU in Columbus, Ohio. And thanks very much for being with us today.
Thank you, Neil.
Let's begin with the certification of the vote that came yesterday. And it turned out that President Bush's margin of victory was just a little bit smaller than we'd thought.
Yes, absolutely. The reason for that is that there were some provisional ballots that hadn't been counted yet, some absentees and some overseas absentee ballots that hadn't been counted either. And Kerry had an advantage, certainly, in the provisional ballots that were filed on Election Day.
So the final margin is about 119,000 votes.
You've got it, 119,000 votes. And that's not enough to trigger, that's not even close to, that's way more than you would need to trigger an automatic recount. An automatic recount requires just a 0.25% margin. So basically, there's no way that there would be an automatic recount at this point in Ohio. And we've known that since the wee hours of the morning after Election Day.
But there will be a recount.
Absolutely. There appears that there will be a recount. The Green Party and the Libertarian Party candidates have, they say yesterday afternoon, FedExed letters requesting a recount to all of Ohio's 88 counties. So, and they have the right to do that, so there will be a recount.
I gather they're required to offer to pay for this recount, though.
Yeah, well, it's funny. They're required to pay $10 per precinct. This dates back to a law that was written back in the 1950s. So they only have to pay $113,000. The Secretary of State estimates it will cost the state $1.5 million.
Has there been any evidence there in Ohio of systematic fraud?
Well, that's an interesting question. It depends on who you ask. Statewide, in various precincts, there were very long lines to vote. Some people argue that there was some systematic mishandling of voting machine allocation, that predominantly Democratic precincts may have gotten fewer voting machines than predominantly Republican precincts. But thus far, there haven't been any real facts to back that up.
And go ahead. I'm sorry.
There's one other thing that that some folks have been saying is that there was a statewide judicial candidate, a Democrat, who in quite a few counties actually, they say, received more votes than John Kerry, which they say that that doesn't make sense because she was way down ballot. More people would be likely to vote for John Kerry and skip the judicial. So the people who plan to file a lawsuit in the state Supreme Court say that that is a glaring indication that something has gone wrong.
Is there any expectation that, first of all, how long is this recount going to take?
So there are actually two separate things going on. There's the recount and then what's called a contest of the election. The recount, they don't expect to even start until the 13th of this month. So it'll be a few more days. They have to notify all of the candidates and people have to be able to observe the recount. So it's a somewhat complicated process that could take a while and could go to a hand recount if certain things don't work out. I mean, it's long and complicated.
And at this point,
the contest of the election is a lawsuit that they expect to file sometime this week, and that's sort of all up to the courts.
I see. Now, is there any expectation at this point that a recount could conceivably reverse the results of the election?
Well, I spoke to someone from the Green Party today who said that it is possible, but not probable, that they're more interested in making sure that every single vote counts and is counted, and sort of shining a light on what they see as problems with the election. But they don't certainly expect the Green or Libertarian candidates to win, and they don't really expect that John Kerry would be able to overcome this 119,000 vote margin.
Tamara Keith, thanks very much for being with us today.
Thank you.
Tamara Keith, a reporter for NPR member station WOSU in Columbus, Ohio. Well, here with us in Studio 3A is Andy Kohut, director of the Pew Research Center for the People and the Press. And Andy, it's always good to see you here.
Happy to be here, Neil.
Day after election was the last day you were here with us on this program, and I'm sure you remember that lack of sleep extremely well.
I sure do.
At the time, we were all talking about the exit polls the day before, which touted moral values as the single most important issue identified by most voters as the reason why they voted the way they did for president.
And I was saying then, and I continue and have been saying since, that I don't want to underestimate the power of religion and moral values in this, in modern American politics, and even in this election. But the question on the exit poll, the way it was posed, the way it was framed, exaggerated the importance of moral values in this election. Just to review the bidding, in this poll, as in all exit polls, voters are asked to check what issue was most on their minds. And the list included Iraq, the economy, terrorism, health care. But in this election, the exit pollsters decided to use this category, moral values. Moral values is unlike Iraq, the economy, and terrorism in that it's not a specific issue. It's a catch-all phrase. It's one that has a certain degree of social desirability to conservatives. It's almost hard for many conservatives to say, gee, moral values weren't on my mind when I cast this ballot. And I think it led to it came up as the number one issue ahead of terrorism, ahead of the economy, and even ahead of Iraq. And I think it was just an overstatement because it's an apples to oranges comparison. That weekend, the weekend following the election, we replicated that result in a poll that we did of voters for another half sample. We asked people open-ended what issues were on your mind. Number one was Iraq with 25%. Moral values only scored 14%. And this was at a time in which the voters over this three-day period had heard about little else other than moral values. Now, we had never seen an open-ended questions prior to the exit poll any significant mention of moral values as a category. Sure, some people would mention, well, I'm voting on abortion or I'm voting on homosexuality. But this moral values thing is that we picked up, even at a lower level, is life imitating art.
Mm-hmm. The other thing you said on the day after the election was moral values. You said it was a sort of a catch-all. Did your polls discover what people meant when they checked that moral values thing?
Well, it meant a variety of things. When we asked people to tell us, 29% of those who chose moral values said gay marriage, 28% said the abortion issue, 4% said stem cell, 9% said other qualities, 23% said the candidates of the qualities of the candidates, 17%, etc. It's a whole range of things.
Let's get some callers in on this conversation. Our number again is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. And our email address is totn@npr.org. And we'll begin with Deborah, who's calling from Berkeley, California.
Good morning.
Well, good morning to you.
I'd like to get a clarification whether how the question was asked or whether people were speaking about moral values in terms of the moral character of the candidates or their own set of moral values, and if there's been any follow-up clarification about what sort of policy issues they associate with moral values. Like some may say they're anti-abortion, and yet they don't support funding prenatal care, mm-hmm. that kind of thing.
Okay.
The question was asked as follows. Check the issue that was most important to you, and the respondent was offered a choice of Iraq, the economy, healthcare, education, taxes, and moral values, with no follow-up, and obviously in this kind of poll, to determine what they meant by this. But what we found out when we asked people in a comparable question a few days later about moral values, they were basically talking about what I would call the life issues, gay marriage, abortion, stem cell research, but also general perceptions of the morality of the candidates, they made religious references to the candidates, and also traditional values. So it's really very much a mixed bag, but it wasn't so much about, and I think this is what you're probably getting at, it wasn't so much about moral values related to a whole range of issues.
Mm-hmm.
So there were no, Deborah asked, no specific policy implications of this?
No.
Okay.
No.
Deborah, thanks very much for the call.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. And now let's talk with Josh, and Josh is calling from Provo, Utah.
Yeah, my question is to the fellow from Pew Research. I spoke with a fellow student at the university I attend, and he had made an indication that the statistics show that past election years have shown people indicating moral values as their number one issue in a similar way. Is there any statistics to show that this has been just as important an issue in past elections as this year?
Not in the national exit poll, but the Los Angeles Times has an exit poll that it does every 4 years, and they've tracked this moral values category, and it ranks pretty high and pretty consistently high. I think the message in this election was that moral values is an important characteristic, but it is not as high an issue or was not as prominent an issue as were some of these issues that dealt with situations such as Iraq or the economy or terrorism. And this is not to say that people don't have moral concerns or aren't worried about issues like homosexuality or abortion, but these issues really never rose to the level of concern with respect to the presidential candidates than did the debate about Iraq or the debate about terrorism or healthcare or some of these other things.
Have they been any more important this year than past years?
No. In fact, one of the things that we see in this election is that this electorate was not more socially conservative than the electorate 4 years ago, did not attend church more often. It was pretty much like the electorate in 2000. In other words, there was no indication that religion played a disproportionately important role in this election. It did play an important role, but not more important, either with respect to voting patterns or with respect to turnout.
Interesting. Thank you.
Thanks, Josh. And so what was different was obviously questions about terrorism and Iraq clearly couldn't have been on exit polls 4 years ago.
That's right. And what happened in this exit poll is what was lost was the fact that the choice was basically about leadership. On every measure relating to leadership, President Bush bested Senator Kerry by a large amount. I'm going to read you an exit poll result that didn't get enough airing. The exit poll has said to voters, what candidate quality was most on your mind when you selected Bush or Kerry? For Bush, the number one issue was strong leader, 29%. The number two issue was clear stand on issues, 27%. The third issue was honest and trustworthy, 16%, all relating to leadership. The fourth issue was strong religious faith, 14%.
And by contrast, how did Kerry do quickly?
He got 1% on strong religious faith. What most people said was he represents change, 47%.
Andy Kohut of the Pew Research Center for People in the Press. We're going to continue our conversation after a short break, and we'll take more of your calls, 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. Our email address is totn@npr.org. I'm Neil Conan. This is Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. A month after the presidential election, we're taking stock of the role of moral values and religion and why the early exit polls were off target. In a few minutes, we'll turn to the Latino and African American vote. We'd especially like to hear from Latino and African American callers in that segment. Our phone number is 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK, and our email address is totn@npr.org. With us now is Andy Kohut, director of the Pew Research Center for People and the Press. And Andy, early on election day, the first wave of election polls seemed to show John Kerry in the lead, in fact, decisively in the lead. And that lead obviously evaporated as real election results came in that night. What happened?
Well, we still don't know what happened. Clearly, the overstatement, there was a bias, a Democratic bias in this exit poll. My theory, and I think the theory of many people, is that the Republican voters turned down, refused the exit poll in greater numbers than was the case for Democratic people who supported Senator Kerry. That may have something to do with the sharp rising anti-media sentiment among Republicans, because after all, on this questionnaire where the logos of all of the news news organizations that sponsored the exit poll, there may have been some problems in just the sheer performance of the exit poll. Some of the precincts weren't well covered, but they were, all of the problems were in the Republican direction, and not only in the national exit poll, but in many states. The exit poll is private property at this point. Belongs to the networks, belongs to the sponsors. We don't know. It hasn't been completely, it hasn't been let public at all. And but we have to get to the bottom of this. There's been some repair work done on the margins to the exit poll. The exit poll was adjusted to take into account this bias, this top-line bias toward Kerry. But it's still not perfect, even with the statistical adjustments have been made to it. There's questions about, for example, the Hispanic vote, which I know you're going to talk about later. But there are questions, other questions as well. So it's really an open issue. I think one of the things we should recognize is that, unlike in the years past, polling places have become more politicized, more contentious places, and it's not as easy to do exit polls as it was back in the 80s and 90s.
Let's get another caller in. This is Janice. Janice is with us from Charleston, South Carolina.
Yes. I think this thing is actually more connected to terrorism than you may think, because right before the election, Bin Laden came on television. And when that happened, it made a lot of people afraid. And when they were afraid, they turned to religion. They looked at Bush and they said, well, Bush's candidate, he's kept us safe since 2001, and so therefore we need to keep him in office. Also, in terms of organization, the Democrats were not as good about getting people to get people out to the polls. The religious right was extremely aggressive in getting out their voters and making sure that they got out and voted and were reminded about voting and that type of thing. So religion is integrated into this whole Bush presidency and the right and their support of the Republicans.
Mm-hmm. Andy?
Well, the data doesn't support your contention in either case. The Republicans did have a stronger turnout. Both Republicans and Democrats did better this time. We had higher turnout.
Yeah, but I worked on
this. Let me finish, and then you can respond. For example, the percentage conservative went from 30 to 34%, 30% in 2000 to 34% currently. But all kinds of conservatives, both religious conservatives and non-religious conservatives, turned out at higher rates. Further, there were no differences in terms of the religiosity, so to speak, of this electorate versus 4 years ago in relative terms. As to Bin Laden's appearance, there was no movement in the polls toward Bush in subsequent to Bin Laden's appearance. And in fact, the late trend, if anything, in the exit polls went in the polling, which was very accurate, I might add, the pre-election polling, went to Kerry, not to Bush. So I don't see any evidence of this. And we see the same trend with Republican, overall more Republicans in this electorate than 4 years ago. But this included both religious Republicans and Republicans who are either moderately or not so religious.
But I'm not talking about how they polled before the election. I'm talking about who actually went to the polls.
These are exit polls that I'm reading to you.
Okay. Well, they may not be as accurate. But I feel we saw a lot more numbers, large numbers of churchgoers picketing all the churches, large numbers of church-motivated people handing out flyers at the polls about abortion. We saw very few Democrats doing that, and I don't think they were really nearly as successful in turning out the vote.
I don't want to be contentious and argue with you, but the issue is what you saw, but the issue is what you didn't see. And the polls and the exit polls would suggest that there was great conservative turnout for President Bush, but it was all a variety of kinds of conservatives, and it was an across-the-board win.
And there was across-the-board a bigger turnout of Democrats as well.
That's right. That's right.
Okay. Janice, thanks very much for the call.
All right. Thank you.
Bye-bye. Are we asking too much of polls, do you think, Andy Cohut, particularly that Election Day exit poll? I mean, we have to treat it much more skeptically in years to come?
Well, I think it's tougher to do, and I think we're under tremendous pressure that night to the news organizations are in tremendous pressure either to call races, to try to understand and explain to listeners and viewers and readers why it's going on. And it's just not as easy as it has been in the past. And the exit polls have to do something different and give us some information that will restore confidence in this process, because this is one of a series of flops. And they have to go public and say, here's what the problem was. Here's the way we're going to fix it. And we, the users, the people in the media, have to say, and we're going to treat it differently, and because we've been burned a number of times now.
Mm-hmm. And getting back just for a moment to the pre-election polling, and this is not exit polling, but this is the pre-election polling, there were a lot of questions coming up to this election about, was that accurate? Were they counting people who, for example, relied on cell phones as opposed to landlines who couldn't be polled? And how did that turn out?
Well, it turned out pretty well. The pre-election polls, on average, had a small Bush margin, anywhere from 1.5 points upward. On balance, the pre-election polls did a very good job of foretelling the presidential election, as they did 4 years ago, 8 years ago, and in every recent election. It was a hairy race in terms of the trends in these polls, but in the end, they settled down and they produced a pretty good assessment of what the electorate would look like on Tuesday.
We're going to take one more call with Andy Cohut, and then we're going to switch and focus more closely on the African-American and Latino vote on Election Day. So if you have questions about that, again, the phone number is 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK, and the email address, TOTN@NPR.org. Let's talk with Donna. Donna's calling from Whitmore Lake, Michigan.
Hello.
Hi, Donna. You're on the air.
Hi. Well, I just wanted to comment that I think that when people are referring to the moral issues on the exit polls, I voted for John Kerry, and if someone had administered an exit poll to me, I would have said that moral issues were high on my agenda too, but I would have defined them a lot differently. I would have defined them as social issues and the environment, things like that. Wouldn't have had anything to do with religion per se.
Well, certainly voters who supported John Kerry were more concerned about health care. They were more concerned about the economy in Iraq than they were about religion. But this is a very typical pattern that we see in modern elections. Again, I'm not attempting to say that religion is not an important element in voter choice, but just that it wasn't disproportionately important in this election. And the pattern of a strong religious base to Republican support was clearly there in this election. President Bush won by 59 percentage points among white evangelical Protestants, who represent 24% of the electorate. That's a pretty powerful statistic, and Senator Kerry carried secular voters. So religion is alive and well. It's an important element in American politics. But I think its impact has been overstated in this election.
Donna, thank you very much. And Andy Cohut, it's always good to have you here on Talk of the Nation. We appreciate it.
Happy to be here, Neil.
Andy Cohut is director of the Pew Research Center for the People and the Press, and he joined us here in Studio 3A. So, the African-American and Latino vote. Joining us here in Studio 3A is Roberto Suro, director of the Pew Hispanic Center. And it's good to have you. I'm sitting next to your colleague here before he leaves.
Yeah, it's good to be here. Thank you.
And joining us now on the phone from Colonial Beach, Virginia, is Ron Walters, professor of government and politics at the University of Maryland at College Park. And nice to have you back on the program.
Good to be with you.
Roberto Serra, let's begin with you. There were big problems this year with the exit polls, as they specifically with the Latino vote.
That's right. The initial national poll showed Bush getting 44% of the Hispanic vote, which seemed awfully high and would have represented a very dramatic swing towards the Republican column. We understand that number better now considerably. We understand, first of all, why that number seemed high. The national poll disproportionately polled voters in Miami, Florida, where you've got a large number of Latinos who are very Republican. And that produced a higher Republican number in the overall sample. And there's a subsequent poll that has become now public that was done the same day by the same organization in all 50 states. To get 50 state results individually have now been compiled. And it comes up with a number of 40% for Bush, which is more of what people expected, and I think is, you know, there's sort of a consensus gathering around that number now.
So in a poll which, as Andy Koh had said earlier, had a overall Democratic bias in terms of the Latino segment of that poll, it had a Republican bias.
Yeah, and for different reasons. I mean, it was really just because of the sampling strategy for Latinos of the plurality precincts with large Latino populations, three of them were in Miami-Dade County of 11, and it just spiked up the number a bit, apparently.
So, weighing all of this afterwards, with a month to tweak the numbers, what can you tell us now about the Latino vote?
Well, I mean, it seems clear that Bush improved his performance, and he had already done well in 2000, and went from what, you know, the consensus for 2000 is around 35%, and the consensus this year, I think, is going to settle around 40%. He improved with Hispanics as he did with a number of other constituencies, but there's been a steady gain among Republicans now in these two cycles. What's not clear is whether this is a permanent realignment or it's just one candidate who's done well with this constituency, but it certainly changes the thinking about Hispanics who were previously, you know, when candidates like Bill Clinton were getting 70% of the Hispanic vote considered sort of a Democratic core constituency.
Bedrock, yeah.
Yeah. When you're getting, you know, 53%, 54% of 56%, something like somewhere in there, it's a much more contested vote.
Mm-hmm. We'll get back to explore why in a few minutes, but let's bring Ron Walters into the conversation. Ron, in a post-election op-ed column, you wrote to say that there's much about this election that's counterintuitive. What did you mean by that?
Well, I just thought that as a political scientist, when you look at things like the registration that was going on and the fact that, generally speaking, when you have booming rates of registration, that begins to signal that the electorate wants some form of change. And it wasn't clear that that change, of course, was in the direction of George Bush. It more often than not, it is getting the person out of office who is already there.
Yeah, change usually favors the challenger.
That's right. And you saw the registration increase really all along the board, not only in this country, but also in Europe. I read one article from Cape Town, which said that in 2000, there were 50 people that showed up, this time 350. So it looked as though that all across the board, you were having this very strong effect. In addition to that, there was a study that came out from the Kennedy School Institute of Politics of young people. These were college students, and they were breaking for Kerry by 52% to 37%. So that all of the indicators that I was looking at said that this looked as though this was going fairly solidly for Kerry. In addition to that, of course, some of the exit polling that came up right to the election showed him in a slight lead. And, of course, the opposite result occurred, and it really sort of threw a lot of us off.
We're talking about election 2004, a month later. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And the turnout was up on both sides, as we were talking about earlier. And, Ron Walters, what about the African-American turnout?
Well, the African-American turnout continued a trend which has been going on for a few election cycles now, and going upward. I think this time it was in the neighborhood of 57-58%. Again, when the numbers finally settle, I think it'll be somewhere in the neighborhood of 2 percentage points different from the white turnout. And that's, I think, an untold story, which is that since the Voting Rights Act in 1965 was passed, black turnout as a proportion of the black population has now pretty much equaled white turnout as a proportion of the white population. And, of course, this time I think it it's probably going to close. In 2000, it was something like 2 percentage points difference in registration and 3 percentage points difference in voting. This time it's much closer, although we don't know what the exact final figure is.
Okay. Let's get another listener involved in the conversation, and we'll talk with Harus. Am I pronouncing that correctly, in St. Paul?
Yeah, very much close, yes.
Okay, go ahead with your questions.
Well, I was watching C-SPAN one day about that the Hispanic votes very much went evenly between Kerry and Bush, somewhere 53 and 40-something. Mm-hmm. And there was a lady said that in New Mexico, for example, 70% of Catholic Hispanics went to Kerry, whereby the other went, 70% of Protestant Catholics, Protestant Hispanic went to Bush, whereby the other went to Kerry. And I'm wondering the religious differences of these Hispanic voters.
What can you tell us about that, Roberto Sura?
For the best we can tell, the religious breaks among Hispanics were similar to those in the general population, where people who describe themselves as Protestant, particularly evangelical Protestants, went in a very substantial majority for Bush, maybe even more so among Hispanics than in the white population, more secular and more Catholic voters broke for Kerry.
More Catholic voters voted for Kerry.
Well, Kerry, you have to remember, even now that we have a better sense of the polls, still carried a clear majority of the Latino vote. I mean, he certainly the assumption is now that he got close to 60%, somewhere certainly in the high 50s. So,
and if you're going to do that, you're going to carry the majority of the Catholics.
Exactly.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Roberto Sura is with us. Also with us, Ron Walters at the of the University of Maryland. Harus, thank you very much for the call. I think we just heard Harus hang up. He got his cue. We're going to take more of your calls when we return from a short break, if you'd like to join us. 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK, and the email address is totn@npr.org. 1 month after Election Day, we're focusing on the black and Latino vote and how it is burgeoning and how it is affecting national politics. Again, 800-989-8255. I'm Neil Conan. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. Now we're going to continue our conversation about the African and Latino vote in this year's presidential election in this country, if you'd like to join us. Our number is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. The email address is totn@npr.org. Our guests are Ron Walters, professor of government and politics at the University of Maryland College Park, and Roberto Sura, director of the Pew Hispanic Center. And let's get another caller on the line. And this is Jacqueline, and Jacqueline is calling from Miami.
Hi.
Hi, welcome. You're on the air.
Okay, the reason why I was calling in is because I voted for Kerry because of my Christian values, okay? Mm-hmm. And also because I'm a small business owner, you know, voting Republican would have served me well because of the tax cuts that Bush gave to, you know, corporate America. But because I am a Christian and that's important to me, I know that for sure that you should be concerned with those that are in need, those that cannot afford medical treatment, for people that are less fortunate. And I can see that the Republican Party definitely are not concerned about that. And to me, that's more of a big part of being a Christian than, you know, worrying about what people do in their bedrooms and things like that.
Mm-hmm. Well, Ron Walters, everybody can have their own opinion about moral values, as Jacqueline does. How did the black vote turn out in terms of religious values? Did President Bush do better amongst blacks, particularly conservative religious blacks this year?
There was a poll taken by the Joint Center for Political and Economic Studies, which is a black think tank, before the election in October. That poll indicated that whereas in 2000 Bush was supported by blacks by 9%, at this time it was 18%. And that started a lot of discussion about whether or not the same thing would happen when the actual election came. Well, his vote for black vote went up, I think it was 2%, not much more than that, 9 to 11%. When you look at various states, however, Oklahoma, black support for Bush was 28%. And in some of the battleground states, like Pennsylvania, 18%, Ohio, 16%. So in some states, it was significant. And the thinking about that is that just as the Republican strategy was to appeal to evangelical conservatives, it swept up some blacks. And so that the most people think that the people actually voting for Bush in terms of the increase were ministers, conservative blacks, evangelicals.
Interesting. Jacqueline, thanks very much for the phone call. We appreciate it.
You're welcome.
Bye-bye. Let's talk now with Dan. Dan's with us from Salt Lake City.
Hi.
Hi.
My question relates to the figure that your guest gave earlier about the poll that was heavily weighted in Florida and therefore skewed the views of, or rather skewed the results as far as what way the Latino vote was leaning?
Mm-hmm. The exit polls, yes.
And my question is, if they can be that skewed, if a poll can be that skewed, and you know, the other thing I wanted to mention is that I know that some people vote based on how they think they perceive their community is voting, and therefore would vote based on the poll itself rather than on, you know, coming to their own personal conclusions about one candidate or another. Couldn't it be that the polls are actually swaying the vote and therefore maybe doing more harm than good?
The exit polls are swaying, affecting the people who are voting later in the day. Roberto Suro?
Well, you know, the networks have a policy of not releasing the exit poll results in individual states until the polls have closed in those states. And
but this was being bruited about on the internet, among other places.
Yeah, it was, and I mean, and actually, the results that were being bruited about on the internet were incorrect, as they showed Kerry winning and actually doing very well in Florida and Ohio and other states. In terms of you know, the Hispanic vote and exit polls in general, these things are still surveys and they have margins of error. And you know, you had two big polls on Election Day, the national one that had the higher Latino number, and then all these individual state polls. In the national survey, the sampling error is by the precincts that are picked, and they pick precincts to try and map the whole country, and usually come pretty close.
But not this time.
Well, no, and you know, it goes back to your question of how much can you ask. Between 40% and 44% is, you know, both those results are within their own margin of error, you get a spread there, and we're asking a lot to try and nail things down specifically. Now, you would have thought, if you were looking at your list of 250-odd precincts, that if you had only 11 that were had a majority Latino population, and three of them were in Miami-Dade County, you'd expect your number might pop up a lot.
Over-representation, perhaps, of Cuban-Americans.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Dan, thanks very much.
Thank you.
Okay. Let's talk now with Eddie, and Eddie's calling from Pella, Iowa.
That's right. What I'm wondering is, it seems as if the increase in young people to vote, particularly kids of color, but especially black kids, came from some of the entertainment industry's effort, Puff Daddy or P. Diddy, as well as Russell Simmons. And what I'm wondering is, it appeared to me as well that there wasn't a lot of education going along with this attempt to register young people. And I was wondering if your panelists were feeling or hearing or what they were hearing from young people in reference to their exiting the polls. But also, is there anything that shows there's some participation from athletes? Because in the past, it seems like, particularly in reference to folks of color, but particularly black folks, that was a big part of the education process for voting and reasons for voting
and candidates for support, and that didn't seem to be happening as well.
Ron Walters?
Well, when you look at the increase, we have a an organization at the University of Maryland called Circle, and it focuses on young people voting. Estimated that the total increase in youth voting this time was around 4.6 million. I calculate that about 800,000 of those were young blacks. And it is true that the P. Diddy's of the world and Russell Simmons, hip-hop mogul, they played a tremendous role in this. They did a tour of 13 states before the election, and a lot of the hip-hop artists and other entertainers joined them. Not too many athletes, but they did have a tremendous impact on youth voting. I also did a focus group in Miami before the election, and this was two groups. One of them, of course, was a sort of hip-hop age. They were 18 to 25. And it was very interesting because they said that these kind of entertainers did have an impact on their, at least turning their attention to vote. But the point I think you're making is really a very good one, and that is that there wasn't a lot of political education, if you will, going along with the attraction. And as a matter of fact, in the focus group, I found that young people really had an abysmal lack of political education.
And I really think that in the future we need to begin to challenge folks like Simmons and Diddy to not simply do voter registration drives, but to do voter education drives. And I was wondering also about, again, that sports industry, and if you see any positive signs that we could plug this group back into this whole political scene, no matter where they vote or how they vote.
Well, some of these people, the Russell Simmons, of course, has made a long-term commitment. And so some of these people will be a part of other election cycles. But you're right, they did their thing pretty much by themselves with the help of other organizations, MoveOn.com and so forth. But what I think they need to do is to pull much closer to other organizations that have been doing voter registration and turnout for a long time. And I'm thinking of organizations like the National Coalition on Black Civic Participation, which runs something called Black Youth Vote, which does a lot of political education. So they need to pull much closer to these kind of organizations.
Eddie, thanks very much for calling. We're talking about election 2004, the Latino and African American vote. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And Roberta Sura, I wonder, just talking about the youth vote among African Americans, was there anything similar among Latinos?
Yeah, there was a significant increase in the youth vote because that population's growing very fast. I mean, it's of all the racial and ethnic groups, Hispanics are a younger population, and we have this phenomenon now of very large numbers of the children of the immigrants of the 80s and 90s who are growing up and now turning 18. Over the last 4 years, it was about 450,000 native-born Latinos turning 18 each year, and that number is going to tick up. So we saw the Latino electorate grew by 20% between the two elections, mostly on the basis of young people entering the electorate, much mm-hmm. more so than immigrants who are becoming naturalized citizens. So that's going to become a very key segment. And it is a difficult segment to mobilize. The indications are that they turned out substantially and that tilted towards Kerry more so than their elders. In fact, there may have been kind of countervailing trends where the young people tilted more Democratic than Latinos overall had in the past, and older and middle class, more middle class suburban Latino voters tilted more Republican, and they kind of the balance of the two favor the Republicans in the end.
Okay, let's talk now with Ian, and Ian's calling from Honolulu.
Yeah, hello.
Hi, you're on the air, Ian.
My call.
Yep.
My question was actually concerning disenfranchisement, especially among the African American population. We know that back in 2000 that the outcome might have been different in Florida, for instance, between Bush and Gore, with all the concerns about disenfranchisement there among the African-American vote. I wonder if this time around, especially in those particular states where the race was so close, in Ohio, where there were a lot of concerns even before the vote that, for instance, the Secretary of State and some other influential people were going to try and suppress the African-American vote, if after the election, if there's any ongoing concerns or evidence that that was a great enough concern that it could have actually swung any of those swing states towards Kerry in these really close elections.
Ron Walters, let's hear from you first.
Well, yes, there are a number of complaints, and they're ongoing. Places, for example, like Indiana, Florida, Michigan, that there were Republicans who stationed hundreds of challengers at black precinct stations. Blacks felt that that was intimidation. There are a number of places where there were not enough machines. Ohio was one of those places where there were long lines into the night, and there were not enough polling stations. Of course, when you look at some of the white precincts, there were adequate machines and adequate number of polling stations and so forth. Some of the places, they say that the machines were to count up to a prescribed number, and then some of the machines started counting backward. So right now, there's a tremendous drama going on in the state of Ohio.
And we heard about that earlier in a report from Tamara Keith in at WOSU in Columbus about the recount that's going to be going on. But enough to swing one of those big states, Florida, Ohio, do you think, Ron?
I think that when you look at Ohio, there are tremendous problems there.
Mm-hmm.
I wouldn't be surprised if in the recount and all of the analysis that are being done, one finds that there were still some serious discrepancies.
Ian, thanks for the call. But Roberto Ciro, let's get a response from the Latino side.
Yeah, I'm not aware of any significant sort of widespread controversies involving that issue with Latinos, certainly nothing on of the magnitude of what we're seeing in Ohio.
So this, in general, though Latinos, again, are a core Democratic constituency, there didn't seem to be this problem with Latinos.
Yeah, I'm sure there must be some complaints here and there, but I've not heard, I'm not aware of anything of the magnitude of what we're seeing in Ohio, for example.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, thanks to you both. We really appreciate your taking the time to be with us today. Roberto Ciro here with us in Studio 3A, Director of the Pew Hispanic Center. Thanks very much.
Thank you very much.
And our thanks as well to Ron Walters. Appreciate the time, Ron.
Thanks for having me.
Ron Walters, Professor of Government and Politics at the University of Maryland at College Park. I'm Neil Conan, NPR News in Washington.